Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on "The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized," right after this. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards, debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin and currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there is a big difference, a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper that are not due on that gold. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well when they did it back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. It's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, for more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It didn't cost you anything. Maybe it isn't for you, in which case it didn't cost you anything to find out. And it's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's very informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. It's written by William Campbell Douglas back in the 1980s. If you want to get a copy of the book, I suggest that you go to William Campbell Douglas and look it up on a Google search, and I think you'll find his webpage. This is an old copy. It's been updated. There's a new version out. I don't have the new version, but I've got the old one. I've reported on this before, and I thought I would start out by telling you that the pasteurization of milk, pasteurization along with homogenization of milk, is a deception. It's a lying deception. It's kind of like the George Orwell book, 1984, that uses terms like newspeak and doublespeak. And that's where we tell you that black is white and white is black, and then you believe that. Let me give you an illustration. Here in the United States today, we're in a recession. Well, they told us we were in a recession, then they told us that the recession is over, but we haven't put anybody back to work yet. But be that as it may, there's a tax program that was enacted by our last president, George Bush, and it was called the Bush Tax Reform. Back about 2001, 2, 3, long in there, when the economy was in recession, President Bush and the Republicans said, well, what we need is a tax reduction act. We're going to reduce everybody's taxes. Now, when you come out and you tell people you're going to reduce their taxes, you know, that's like having Christmas in July. I mean, everybody wants that. And so it was enacted, and they reduced taxes. Now, there's a little known thing in this country called the AMT. It's called the Alternative Minimum Tax. You see, the Bush tax reform, or the Bush tax reduction bill, it really wasn't a tax reduction, it was a tax increase. Now, President Bush needed this tax increase to fund the war in Iraq and to fund massive deficits. And, you know, Republicans can't just come out and say, look, we want to increase your taxes. That belongs to the Democrats. So they have to come along and say, what we're going to do is give you a tax reduction, which is as popular as you can get, when in reality you're going to raise everybody's tax. Now, this AMT tax, called the Alternative Minimum Tax, it fits three classifications of people. See, in this country, we got three groups of people. We got the poor people, we got the middle class people, and then we got the rich people. And so you got poor, middle class, and rich. It's the way this game is played in this country. Probably in yours too. Well, some years back, somebody woke up and said, look, there are people out there, particularly rich people, and they manipulate the tax system and the tax code, and they make millions of dollars and they don't pay any tax. And we got to get after these rich people because they're making all this money and not paying any tax. So if we find somebody that is abusing the system, and he's making a lot of money, you know, he makes $1 million a year, but he's not paying any tax, or he doesn't pay very much, we're going to have a thing here called the Alternative Minimum Tax. That means that you have to pay this minimum amount, you know, just to show that you're a taxpayer and red-blooded American. So they enacted that, and that was very popular because everybody, you know, says, hey, people that are making a lot of money ought to pay their fair share. Okay, so it sounds real good. And so they enacted that. Now, along comes President Bush as the George Orwell story, 1984, unfolds. See, they got a thing here that's called newspeak. Newspeak. That means we're going to tell you one thing, but we're going to do something totally different. We're going to make you feel real good, but we're actually lying to you. So the poor people in this country, and that's people that make $20,000 or less, they don't pay any tax anyway. In fact, when they file their tax return, they get a tax rebate. So the rest of us taxpayers out here, what we do is we subsidize the poor people. So if you're making $20,000 a year working at minimum wage, file your tax return. You not only don't pay any tax, but you get a refund from the government for taxes you never paid. $1,000 or something like that. And that's really popular. That buys a lot of votes, and people love that part of the program. Then we have the middle class people. Now, these are people that never see their taxes. They don't pay taxes. Their taxes are automatically deducted from their paychecks. And this is the way this game is played. You see, because these people don't pay taxes, that is, the middle class of America, their taxes are paid for them. Their employers take it out, send it into the government. They file a return at the end of the year to get their refund back. So they really don't know how much they're paying. And then most people will take it to an H&R Block tax specialist to have him work it out for them anyway. And Americans can't count. And so this alternative minimum tax kicks in on them, and they have to pay either the regular income tax or they have to pay the alternative minimum tax, you know, whichever is which. Now, the alternative minimum tax costs you more than the regular tax. So if you're careful and you budget and you put your savings into your 401k and you do all those things that people are supposed to do, the AMT comes in and taxes you more than you would have been taxed if George Bush had never been thought of. Isn't that special? Then you got the rich people out here. The rich people. When they make the tax law, the rich people are the people that make these tax laws. And so they come along and they say, well, you know, Bill Gates needs to pay his fair share. Now, Bill Gates has never paid his fair share, doesn't now, never has, and never will. That's the way that game is played. But for public consumption, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and the others, they get together and they say, hey, listen, we got to make people, we got to have good PR here. So we got to make people think that we're on their side and that we're in favor of taxing the rich. So they come out and they say, we're in favor of taxing the rich. Then when these laws are written, nobody ever reads these laws after they're written. See, it excludes the rich people from paying the taxes. Warren Buffett even was gracious enough to say, as a percentage of his income, he pays far less tax than does his secretary out in the front office. So that's the way that game is played. Now, the Obama administration the other day, they said, now listen, because we're mired in this recession, what we need to do is to continue these Bush tax cuts for another 2 years. I mean, we're gonna continue it for the poor. Those are the guys that are collecting money anyway. And for the middle class, which pay about 90% of the taxes in this country to start with. And then we're going to let it lapse, go off of the rich people, because the rich people need to pay their taxes. They need to pay their fair share. God love the Obama people anyway. Those rich people need to pay their fair share. All right, now, this is where this Orwell's doublespeak comes into play. This is where the deception comes in. You see, everybody believed when the Bush tax cuts were enacted that they had received a tax cut, when in reality they had received a tax increase of about 10%. So from back around 2002 when it was enacted until today, everybody believes the Bush tax cuts was a tax cut when in fact it wasn't. It was a tax increase. Now these taxes are set to expire on December 31st, 2010. Now if they expire, then you'll go back to the old regime, which is 10% less tax. So if they expire, everybody gets a 10% tax reduction. You see how this works? God, it's genius. Give credit where the credit's due. I mean, the people that put this together, I mean, along with Satan and the Illuminati and all of the insiders in the government and the politicians that have orchestrated this, they have 300 million people in this country believing that they have received a 10% tax cut when in reality they've received a 10% tax increase. Now the Obama people come along and say, no, listen. Listen, because we're mired in this recession, we don't want to raise taxes, which would be the outcome if we let the Bush tax cuts end. So we're going to continue those. So they're promising they're going to continue those. But you see, if you continue those Bush tax cuts, then you're going to continue the 10% tax increase that Bush levied in the first place. Now, if we continue the Bush tax cuts, and Congress needs to act on this, they have to get in there and vote for this. They're saying, but we're going to just do it for the poor and for the middle class, but we're going to stick it to the rich. Well, boys and girls, when this was written, they never raised the taxes on the rich to start with. Got that? They raised the tax on the middle class, which pays 90% of the tax, and the poor people, who never paid any tax anyway. So now when the Obama people enact this new legislation, soak the rich, say, what they're really going to be doing is continuing the tax cut for the rich and continuing the tax increase for the middle class and continue the giveaway to the poor. Isn't that special? All right. Now, that's the Orwell 1984 story, and that's deception. And the world is full of this kind of deception, and milk is one of those deceptions. You see, you've been taught all of your life that raw milk is the kiss of death, and if you drink raw, unpasteurized, unhomogenized milk, you're going to die. It's like trying to live your life without vaccinations. If you miss your flu vaccine, you are toast. You're history. You're going to die. So you better get down there and get your vaccine right away. That's another lying deception, you see, but people believe it. And they believe it because that's what they've been taught from the time they're children. And God made an observation one time. He said, train a child up in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. Well, it works the other way, too, you know. Train a child up in the way he shouldn't go, and when he's old, he'll continue his evil ways, no matter what you try to do to reform him. So, when you grow up to be a big kid, it's not very likely that you're going to change. When you raise a kid up to be a Catholic, the kid's going to die a Catholic. And I only know of one guy that ever said to me one time, he said, Catholicism is like alcoholism. And he said, I am a recovering Catholic. Well, when you get religion pounded into your head when you're a little kid going to catechism and going to Sunday school and so on, when you're an old guy, you're not very likely to change from that. You'll die, whatever, you know. And politics are the same way. You know, when you're raised to be a Republican, you know, as a little kid, and your parents are always talking about Democrats and how bad they are and Republicans and how wonderful they are, well, then you'll tend to be a Republican all of your life. Now, we've been raised in this country, and indeed around the world, to be communists. And we practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and free education for all children in public school is the 10th. So what they do is they send us to public school, 10th plank to the manifesto, to teach us to pay the income tax, a heavy graduated income tax at that. And so we all accept the income tax in place of tithing, which is what God told us to do. So you shouldn't be surprised that we do everything that government tells us to do, and we don't do anything that God tells us to do. Now, God, in the olden days, gave us a land of milk and honey, and he talks about that quite often in the Bible, a land of milk and honey. And there's a statute in the Bible, it's recorded twice, it says, do not boil a kid in his mother's milk. And people have mused over that scripture for years and years, never been able to figure out what it means. You know, they talk about it, but they don't know. Don't see the kid in his mother's milk. And that's because when you boil milk, when you heat milk, it does something to the chemical composition of it, which is bad for you. So God warned you about pasteurized or boiled milk, and then you didn't listen to him, see. But you listen to your teachers, and they tell you, oh my God, this raw milk is a killer. And you know they're not lying to you totally. You know, the elements of deception require that we tell you the truth. It works like this. You see, the truth plus truth equals truth. So if I always told you the truth, you would always know the truth, wouldn't you? Okay. Now, error plus error equals error. So if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. Well, if I always lied to you, it wouldn't take you long until you figured out one lie. And then after about the fifth or sixth time, you say, that guy Gordon lies to me every time he opens his mouth. He lies to me. So whatever it is he's telling me, then the opposite is the truth. So if I always told you the truth, you'd be able to figure out, hey, that was true, that was true, that was true. Hey, this guy Gordon always tells me the truth, so it's always true. So truth plus truth equals truth, and error plus error equals error. Which means that if I always told you a lie, you'd always know the truth. So to deceive you, I must tell you the truth mixed with error. And that's the way we do that. We don't lie to you. Well, not totally. We lie to you a little bit, and we tell you the truth a whole lot. So we give you 75% truth, and we just slip in 25% error. Now, truth plus error always equals error. Sound simple, isn't it? Truth plus error always equals error. So the trick in deception is to make you believe that the error is the truth mixed in with all of this truth. See? And so you look at truth plus truth plus truth, and you say, well, this guy's telling me the truth, but you see, I slipped in a little bit of error there that you didn't know about. Now, that's what we've done here with milk. And William Campbell Douglas discovered that, and so he wrote about it. And he wrote a little story in here. We'll start off with chapter one called Yellow Cows, The History of Milk. And it's pretty interesting little story here. One of the most revolutionary developments in human history was the invention of milking animals for food by the ancients of southwestern Asia. It's hard to understand why no one else thought of it for hundreds and thousands of years. South American Indians had an ample supply of milk available in the llama, but they never took advantage of it. North American Indians had the buffalo, but buffaloes don't milk very easy. The Chinese and Japanese are pretty smart people, but they didn't think of it either. Milking was introduced there only within the past 100 years. The goat was probably the first animal to have the honor of being milked. Horses were too big, dogs too small, cats wouldn't put up with it, but domesticated horses now, they produce great milk, even better than cows, some people say. Now, the earliest pictures of milking show the milker sitting directly behind the cow. Now, that's not the smartest idea. Man learns everything the hard way. And as milking caught on, the technique was extended to almost all domesticated animals except the pig. The pig is too ornery. Have you ever tried milking a pig? Well, the revolutionary adoption of milking domesticated animals for human food enormously increased man's protein supply, and milk with grain became the standard diet of most of the world. Until very recently, the peasants of Scotland ate very little else. Dr. Samuel Johnson made the comment that oats are food for horses in England and food for men in Scotland, to which the Scots replied, "And where else will you find such horses and such men?" Now, when the English came to Jamestown in 1611, they brought their cows with them. One can imagine the astonishment of the Indians on first encountering these strange, docile, short-haired buffalo. With the milk, they brought tuberculosis, brucellosis, undulant fever, typhoid, and other diseases that the Indians didn't need, couldn't use, and didn't want. And don't misunderstand me, it wasn't the fault of the milk. It was diseased people who contaminated the milk that caused the problems, and I'll explain that to you later. Well, during the Renaissance period, the farmers painted their cows yellow to stimulate milk production. Cows and their cousins, such as the ox, have played an important role throughout history. And if you're really interested in the cow's point of view on history, religion, and the arts, read the Cow book by Mark Gallant. Now, milk remained an honest product for over 200 years. Sure, it was contaminated, but so was everything else. Then, the first of the milk manipulators came along. His name was Gale Borden. By condensing milk, Borden discovered that it would keep for longer periods due to its high sugar content. So he patented the process, and it has been all downhill for milk ever since. But the original culprit was probably the Italian biologist Lazzaro Spallangani, who popularized the preserving of food through heating back in 1765. 1873 was also a fateful year for milk here in the United States. Dr. Abraham Jacoby publicly urged the boiling or cooking of all milk used in infant feeding because of the frightful carnage of babies dying at the time from infectious diseases. At times, the death toll reached the unbelievable figure of 65% of babies, and the annual loss of babies throughout the country largely due to unsanitary conditions with consequent fatal infections exceeded 250,000 a year. Cows in the late 1800s were fed on garbage. The commissioner of the New York State Health Department, Dr. Herman E. Halibo, reported that cows were milked in a mixture of manure and mud, dust, dirt, filth, and disease. Germs were as much the total product that people drank as was the milk itself. on farms. Pails that were used to carry slop to the pigs were also used to convey human or cow's milk to human consumers. The New York philanthropist Nathan Strauss lost a child from contaminated milk due to diphtheria. This promoted him to start his famous milk stations, where only cooked or pasteurized milk was supplied to the poor of the city. The effectiveness of heat-treated milk in reducing mortality in the late 19th and early 20th centuries is indisputable. In the seven-year period starting in 1897, the death rate among children in New York City dropped from 42% to 22%, with the only discernible change being the pasteurization heat treatment of milk. The first successful tuberculin test for dairy herds began in 1890. In 1893, under the direction of Dr. Henry L. Coyd of New York, or of Newark, New Jersey, there began a serious effort to control the cleanliness of the milk supply. Dr. Coit deserves some sort of medal for his pioneer work in cleaning up the milk industry. This certification process was started in Essex County, New Jersey, rapidly spreading around the country. And in 1907, the certification of milk, that is, the ensuring by a group of concerned physicians that the milk was pure enough to drink, was generally standardized. Pasteurization began in 1895, and thus began the unfortunate habit of not worrying about cleanliness in the dairy industry, because with the heating of milk, cleanliness was no longer considered necessary. After all, we were killing all the bacteria in the milk, weren't we? So the bacteria in the milk would simply be boiled, killing the germs, and then the milk could be sold in this adulterated form. No need to clean up the manure or other adulterations in the milk. It has been sold that way ever since. And because of pasteurization, tuberculosis was not completely eliminated from cows in the United States until 1941. Now, in the United States Public Health Service and the American Medical Association, if they had done the responsible thing, and if they had backed the various medical milk commissions' efforts to keep the milk clean, tuberculosis could have been eliminated from American cows many decades sooner. Now, Dr. Henry Coit, the father of certified milk, recognized clearly that top quality milk depended upon getting the milk fresh from the cow and not heating it as is done in the pasteurization process. He recognized that the best way to present the best and most nutritious product to the public was to deliver it as nature made it from a completely clean environment. So Coit's theory was we should produce clean milk, keep it clean from the producer to the consumer. Whereas the pasteurization people didn't care whether the milk was clean or dirty as long as it was boiled, which would kill all of the germs. So you can drink dirty pasteurized milk or clean whole certified milk. You know, the choice is yours. In 1891, Coit received an even stronger impetus to crusade for clean milk. His first son, only 2 years old, died from contaminated milk. It took 6 years for Dr. Coit to talk the first dairyman, Stephen Francisco, into producing certified milk. Now, the term certified meant that the milk was inspected by a board of physicians and was certified by them to meet rigid standards of cleanliness. The objective was to produce whole, clean milk, and that it would be certified as being whole, clean milk by an impartial board of physicians. Well, by 1904, 13 years after the tragic death of Coit's son, certified dairies were being inspected regularly. But these progressive dairies represented only a tiny percentage of the total milk production, and the battle for disease-free milk was only beginning. It was estimated in 1905 that 35% Of the 24 million dairy cattle had tuberculosis, and over 10% had brucellosis. Today's raw certified milk must not have a germ count higher than 10,000 per cubic centimeter. In 1911, the milk being served in hospitals often had a count as high as 20 million germs per cubic centimeter. So the Medical Milk Commission, the group of physicians that inspected and certified the raw milk as meeting the rigid standards of safety, grew very rapidly across the country, and by 1930, clean, unpasteurized raw milk was generally available everywhere in the United States. Now, if this healthy trend had continued, pasteurized milk would have never been accepted by the American people. Certification of raw milk by medical experts was rapidly eliminating the disease problem from milk. They had proven that tampering with milk by heat treatment pasteurization was entirely unnecessary, and the people did not trust pasteurization for a number of reasons, the main one being the nutrition factor. Hall and Trout, in their book Milk Pasteurization, admit that due to the deep-seated distrust of pasteurization, one is astounded that the process ever was successfully introduced and sold to the American public. But the pasteurization fanatics were determined to eliminate raw milk from the dinner table. There would be no choice between pasteurized and raw milk. Raw milk had to be eliminated. They had accepted pasteurization as a veritable religion, and although the Medical Milk Commission had proven beyond a doubt that clean milk, not heated milk, was the answer to our problem. So they moved forward with a relentless propaganda blitz. The devious war fought against raw certified milk will be discussed in detail in chapters 4, 5, and 6. Human milk also has a long and interesting history in Sparta, for instance, in Greece, 400 BC. It was decreed that mothers must breastfeed their babies. The Quran dictates that mothers shall suckle their children for 2 years. Caesar ridiculed the mothers of Rome who retained wet nurses for their children. Early American Indians believed that the longer a child received breast milk, the longer it would live. And it was not uncommon for Indian babies to be suckled until they were 9 years old. In the 18th century, there was a great faith in the healing and preventive aspects of human milk. Finland went so far as to penalize a non-nursing mother whose child died during the first 6 months of life. In Chapter 9, you'll see why that wasn't a bad idea. The vogue-conscious French almost destroyed their own race in the 18th century when bottle feeding became stylish, and a French physician at the time said ladies of quality did not breastfeed so they could have more time to dress, receive and pay visits, attend public shows, and spend the night at their beloved cards. Now, the history of milk is the history of civilization, and without it there would be no civilization. So there's the introduction. So there's an element of truth here in pasteurization of milk. If the choice is between dirty milk and dirty milk that's pasteurized, it is without a doubt clear and convincing evidence that dirty milk should be pasteurized. But there is a new concept here. What about clean milk? What if we produced clean, raw milk? Now, I want to make a confession right here. I drink clean, raw milk, have almost all of my life, not quite all, but most of my life. For the last 30 years, I've been drinking about a half a gallon of clean, raw milk every day. Every day. And I've made my 70 years, and I haven't died. And I know it's an anomaly, and I'm probably on my last legs, but I wanted to point that out. Now, we got to take our break here, and let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, these beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. We ought to give William Campbell Douglas a vote of gratitude and a plug for his book. I recommend it highly to all of my students. It was published by Last Laugh Publishers, 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. Now, he wrote, this book has been republished, and it's got a different title, and I've forgotten what the new title is. This one was copyrighted back in 1985 by William Campbell Douglas, all rights reserved, and printed in the United States of America by Copple House Books Incorporated, Lakemont, Georgia, 30552. That was Copple House Books Incorporated. You might find a book like this in, a used bookstore. You might find it at, if you went into Barnes & Noble and said, I'm looking for The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized, William Campbell Douglas, they might be able to find it. Or do a Google search and look up William Campbell Douglas, and it'll give you his webpage. And on his webpage, he has a number of books, and one of them will be on milk. That's the one you're looking for. It'll be this book, but updated. And it's really humorous. I mean, the guy's got a great sense of humor. And wrote a great public service book to expose what pasteurized milk does. Now, let me tell you what it does, and then we'll show you how and why as we progress along. When milk is pasteurized, it's heated. And I think, if I remember right, they heat it to about 165 degrees in round numbers. And for about 60 seconds or something like that, which is supposed to kill all the bacteria. But it does another important thing, very important. There's an enzyme in milk. And more appropriately, the enzyme is in the cream in the milk that you have to have in order to digest it. And your body doesn't have this digestive enzyme. Doesn't have it, can't produce it. So if you're wondering why you're lactose intolerant, it's because the product that you need in the milk, the enzyme, is killed along with the bacteria. And so many people are allergic to milk, or they're lactose intolerant, they'll say. And that's why that is. Now, there's another important reason. We were told not to drink boiled milk. Do you remember that? That comes from the Bible, two places. You shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. Now, there's another reason why this is important. And that is, if you drink pasteurized milk, the fat globules that are in the milk, and this is especially true if it's been homogenized, it exacerbates the problem if you homogenize it, because that breaks the fat particles down even smaller. But these fat particles, they go through your stomach lining and they lodge in your arteries, and they cause plaque, which is called atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis. Now, 110 years ago, we didn't have much problem with heart attack in America, but at the same time that we've been boiling our milk, we have a greater and greater increase in heart disease. Okay, now tuck this one away in your heart. In 1984, I had a small heart attack. And I went to this old naturopath, this old country doctor. And he looked at me and he said, "God, you are sick." He just looked right at me and said, "You are sick." And he said, "What do you think causes your sickness?" And I said, "I haven't got a clue, doc." And then he started asking me about some of my dietary habits. He asked me if I eat meat and the milk and butter and eggs and stuff like that. And so I told him, yeah, I did. And he said, "Well, that's why you're sick." He said, "You're eating this stuff out of the supermarket, and it's prepared food." And so he sent me over to a cardiologist, and he said, "We need to have an electrocardiogram to determine how bad your heart is, because," he said, you've got atherosclerosis." And I said, "Now, wait a minute. How do you know I've got atherosclerosis when you haven't done the electrocardiogram, you haven't taken a blood test, you haven't done jack diddly squat?" And he says, "Well, I can see it." And I said, "Well, since I'm paying the bill here, just how can you see that?" And he said, "Well," and he handed me a mirror, and he said, "Now look at your earlobes. Can you see those deep lines in your earlobes?" And I looked, and I said, "Yeah, I see that." It's very common here in America. You look at people's earlobes, and you'll see a line across there, a crease in their earlobe. Do you know what that means? That means that your arteries are plugged up. And as your arteries plug up, that crease, that line, will get deeper and deeper until they plug up to about 85%, and then you'll start having heart trouble. So your arteries can plug up 10, 20, 30, 50, 60, 70%, and you'll never know there's a problem. It's at 85% plugged that you develop heart disease, heart problems. And I was amazed. I said, well, I guess that's why you get paid what you get paid. And he said, "Yeah, that's right." So he sent me over to the electrocardiogram man. And so they hooked me up to the machine. And the nurse, you know, was handling the project. And so she finished the thing. And it does a graph on paper. So the doctor comes in. And he looks at this graph on the paper. And he said, "Oh, my God, this can't be right. Do it again." And so she gave me a second one at no extra charge. You get two electrocardiograms for the price of one. I guess he had a two-for-one sale this day. And so she did a second one. He comes in, he reads it, and he says, "Oh, my God." He said, "You are a candidate for quadruple bypass surgery." He said, "Your arteries are so plugged up, Mr. Gordon, that if we don't call an ambulance and haul you off in the meat wagon, To have you rotor-rooted out, you're going to die before the end of the day." No, it wasn't quite that bad, but you know, it was a good sales pitch. I got to give him credit. He was trying to sell me a rotor-rooter job. They call that I got a name for that when they clean out your bypass surgery. They call it bypass surgery, and they go into your legs and they pull out some veins, you know, arteries that you don't need in your legs anymore. Well, you know, I guess you don't need them because they take them out and they stick them up in your chest. and they sew them together. It's a hell of a procedure. Costs about $100,000. $100,000. And then you're an invalid for life. I mean, you know, you're alive. Bill Clinton's alive, but, you know, he's not out, you know, building fence or doing anything that's active or physical. He just walks around like a zombie, and he will for the rest of his life because he's had bypass surgery. All right, so now, with that in mind, I went back. I told the doctor, you know, the electrocardiogram doctor, I said, just send this over to Doc Lester, and let's see what he says. So I went over to Lester 2 weeks later, my regular visit, and he said, well, I got the electrocardiogram back, and he said, it's just like I thought. You're about 80% plugged up. You're just now beginning to have some heart trouble. He said, I think we can reverse this fairly easily. We'll do it with chelation therapy. And he said, there's two ways to do this. We can do it intravenously. That's the fast way. Or we can just do it by giving you supplements. And he said, I would recommend the supplements. Now, he said, this will take about 90 days. And he gave me a big bottle, big jar. It was probably maybe a quart jar. Not a mason jar, but probably held about a quarter. It had 90 little packets, and inside each one of these little packets, cellophane packets, there was 5 pills. And he said, these are supplements, and what these do is they dissolve the plaque out of your arteries. Now, he said, you got to quit drinking milk, pasteurized milk. That's what's causing your problem. That's what he told me. See, when I was living on the ranch, I drank raw milk, and I drank lots of it. And then when I left the ranch, I moved to the city, and I just kept drinking milk. I bought it in the store. And the milk in the store, of course, is all pasteurized and homogenized, and I didn't know there was any difference. Most people don't. So I just kept on drinking it for about 20 years. And in that 20 years, I plugged up my arteries. And that's what happens with pasteurized milk. Well, actually, it's not the milk, it's the cream and milk. So that's why people have gone to drinking 1% milk, you know, boiled 1% milk. It's got its health problems also, but not quite as bad as if you're drinking the cream. See, the cream has to have that enzyme. That cow produces an enzyme that digests that cream, and without it, it builds up in your arteries, and that's what happened to me. So the doc said, now listen, here's what we're going to do to cure you. He said, now you're going back to Isabella, Missouri now with your new wife. See, I just married my new wife out there in Idaho. And he said, she has a milk cow, she tells me. And I said, well, that's right. She says, I don't know, I haven't been there, but she says she's got a milk cow. And he said, now we can expedite this chelation process. Here's what I want you to do. Every morning, I want you to have a bowl of cornflakes or oat bran or whatever it is you eat in the morning. And I want you to put 1 cup of raw cow's cream on your cereal every morning for the next 3 months while you're doing this chelation. And I said, well, I thought you said that it's the cream. He said, no, watch what's going to happen here. He said, remember, this raw cow's cream has this enzyme in it. This enzyme will expedite the dissolving of the platelets in your arteries, because that enzyme is specifically designed by God to do just that. So if you drink raw cow's cream, now I want to emphasize this to you boys and girls listening to this program. If you go to the store and you buy pasteurized cow's cream, that will kill you. But if you get raw cow's cream, it'll clean you out. Got that? Very important distinction here. And so, as they say, you know, to protect ourselves, you know, make sure you go talk to your doctor, because I don't know how many times I've told people things and then they get it backwards and they go out and do the exact wrong thing. Exactly what I told them not to do is what they do. So make sure you go talk to your medical doctor first and get his okay. He'll tell you, my God, whatever you do, don't drink cow's cream. Most of them will tell you, stop drinking milk altogether. It's bad for you. But God, the Creator, now he thought milk was so good, he called it the land of milk and honey. And honey, by the way, when you heat it above 132 degrees, if you want to write that down, it's 132 degrees is the magic number. That's when the enzyme is killed by the heat. So your honey, you know, should be naturally processed without heat. It takes longer and it's slower, and the honey processors don't like to do that. They like to heat it up to around 180 degrees. And that honey just flows like water. I'm telling you, it just looks like water, and it just runs right through the filters. But it kills all the enzymes in it, and that's why it doesn't sugar. Well, now, milk is a food. It's not an industrial solvent, you know, like running petroleum through a distillation process so you can make gasoline. That's the way we treat our food. We treat it like an industrial process, you know, and so we heat it and boil it and cook it, and we destroy the natural food value. Now, the natural food value are things like vitamins. You don't destroy the minerals, but you destroy the vitamins and you destroy the enzymes. And these vitamins and enzymes are absolutely essential for you to have good health. So I came back here to the farm, and I dutifully took my one cup of cow's cream every morning, and I put it on my cereal. He said, you cannot drink too much cow's cream, so if you want two cups, you can have two. So I did. And I took my five pills every day, and I did that for 3 months. And I went back out to Ontario, Oregon, which is where this Dr. Lester was stationed. And he took a look at me, and he said, you are much, much better. And he said, how do you feel? And I said, oh, I feel great. I feel good. I never did feel bad. Just because I've got advanced atherosclerosis didn't mean that I was feeling better. Couldn't work. But I'm not feeling bad now, and I feel pretty good. And he said, well, we need to test you. We need to find out, you know, how much we have accomplished here. So I'm going to send you back to the electrocardiogram man, and he did. Sent me back to Boise, and I went to the electrocardiogram man. Now, remember, this is 3 months later. And I went in, and we did the thing again, and he came in just like he did the time before, and he says, oh, my God, this can't be right. Do it again. I mean, this guy's got his sales pitch down, doesn't he? He's like selling encyclopedias door to door. I mean, this doctor was good. And so the nurse, she did it a second time, and he came back in, and he looked at it, and he says, oh, my God, this just cannot be. And he looked at me, and he said, what is Lester giving you? And I didn't know. How do I know what the hell the doc's giving me? I said, he gives me some pills, and I took these pills. And now, I didn't tell him anything about the raw cow's cream. I didn't tell him anything. And I said, if you want to know, you need to call Lester. He said, well, I can't believe these results. He said, you came in here 3 months ago, and he said you were on death's door. You needed bypass surgery. And that's what I told you. He said, now you come back here 3 months later, and your arteries are about one-third cleaned up from what they were. Well, now let's take 80% plugged. That's what they said, 80. Now take about one-third off of that. That's 33%. And you'd get 7, and 3 would be 27. Is that right? No, 3 from 7 would be 4. So now your arteries, instead of being 80% plugged up, they're only 47% plugged up. You know, round number. And he said, that is remarkable. And he said, I'd like to know what Lester is doing. And I said, well, it has something to do with chelation. And he says, oh, he's giving you chelation. Now, I want to remember, or you want to remember, boys and girls, that chelation, spelled C-H-E-A-L-A-T-I-O-N, I think that's the way it's spelled, chelation, was developed in 1963 by the American Medical Association at Johns Hopkins University Hospital, New York. Yeah. So chelation therapy isn't some quack program, you know, that was thunk up, you know, by some sleazy abortion doctor, you know, performing abortions in back alleys. It was done by the AMA. Now, they don't promote it because chelation, and there's not too many of these chelation therapy centers here in the United States, but in most of the major cities, there'll be one. I mean, if you looked it up or you were asked around, you'd probably find one. And I went through the drip, too. Once I got this out of the way, I said, you know, I think I'll go get this done. So they stick a needle in your arm, you know, give you an IV. You go in once a week for about, I think it's 3 months, if I remember right. So I had to drive up to Springfield, you know, every Tuesday, and get my bag of chelation. And they stuck it in me. I kept on with the raw cream, and I did the chelation. I mean, I didn't want 47% of that stuff left in my arteries. So, hell, I went up and paid. It was pretty cheap compared to bypass surgery. But I think I spent about $1,000 to $1,500 over the 3 month period to do the chelation program. Figure double that today, you know, $3,000. But hey, $3,000 versus $100,000 is chicken feed. And $3,000 to clean out your arteries, I would recommend that chelation. And hey, listen, I won't even get in trouble for it because it's approved by the AMA. See how simple that is? So not everything that the medical doctors do to you is necessarily harmful. There are a couple of three things that they can do, like setting a broken bone. I've reported to you a couple of times on that. And once in a while, you know, the medical miracle men, will come along and they'll come up with a good plan as chelation's one of them. Now, there's a simpler, easier way to do that, and William Campbell Douglas points that out here in his book on The Milk of Human Kindness Is Not Pasteurized. And the reason I butted in here and I told this story is because I actually lived through it and I actually did it. You know, that's one of my stories. I did the chelation by way of the natural process called the enzyme in raw cream. Now, I want to point out that a few states will allow you to drink raw milk. So if you can find raw milk in your state, it's going to be hard. You can find cocaine, heroin, and marijuana easier and maybe even cheaper than certified raw milk. I don't know, but in a lot of places, raw milk is sold like cocaine. You'll have to have a supplier, you know, because you're going to be a milk junkie. And in order for you to get raw milk, you're going to have to pay a premium price, and you're going to have to buy it in the back alleys. And you probably won't know much about the quality of it, which is not good. And I don't deny that, but, you know, that's where we're at here in America. I mean, raw milk in America is forbidden, forbidden. You could get away in California with marijuana. Of course, California is one of the rare states. They actually have certified raw milk in California. You can buy it in the grocery store. And I think Georgia is the other state. There's only two, California and Georgia, where you can still buy it. And they're trying to ban it. I mean, they're trying to get rid of it in any way they can. And that's the dairies. They want to get rid of it. Because, you see, pasteurizing dirty milk is a cheaper, easier, cleaner solution than producing clean raw milk to start with. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense to pasteurize milk. Because that way you can produce a dirty product. It can just be rotten dirty. And because you're going to pasteurize, you're going to kill all the bacteria. And then you don't care because you can't see all the dirt that's in there anyway. Now, don't be confused with physical dirt in the milk. That can be strained out with a filter. The dirt that's in here are the disease organisms that's in this milk. That's what you need to keep out. And that's what we'll be talking about in the next part of the story. When we're talking about this production of clean milk versus dirty milk. I prefer clean, whole, raw milk to dirty, pasteurized milk. Hey, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.